All right, I made a mistake. Today's guest is not Jennifer Glimp from the district attorney's office, the district attorney investigator, and a police officer. She has disappeared and has been replaced by Jennifer Dalton, according to her legal identification, because she got married. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Jennifer Dalton.
Well, thank you. It's like the Jennifer Dalton 2.0 version.
Is your husband any relation to Timothy Dalton?
No, he's not.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Well, before you came on the air, you didn't even know there was a Timothy Dalton.
I didn't, but I'm pretty sure that my husband's not associated with him.
Well.
Although he is a cutie patootie, let me tell you that.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how cutie, cute Timothy Dalton is, but I guess if you play James Bond, he's probably cute. But who knows? Maybe your husband is a distant relative to Timothy Dalton. And,
you never know.
You work for the DA's office. I guess you could find out before you married him. Did you do like a investigation on him?
You know, I've actually known him for well over 20 years, so we've met, and no need for an investigation.
Had you ever done that? Well, no, I don't want to ask the question. Okay, so we're going to talk about, because I'm sure, people who work in your office, you're not supposed to be using the facilities for personal
correct,
things.
That can get you into some big trouble.
Right, so we're not going to go there. but you are a police officer, and you ended up at the district attorney's office, and you're a district attorney investigator. What does your little branch do, and what do you do for your little wing?
Well, I'm a supervising investigator for the district attorney's office, and the district attorney's office is really unique. We prosecute all of the cases, obviously, that come through, and once a case gets to, it comes to us in a kind of bare-bones structure sometimes, and needs a little shoring up once we get past a preliminary hearing and we're actually going to present it to a jury.
Now, by shoring up, you don't mean like padding the evidence.
Oh, no, no, no. By shoring up,
I
mean sometimes there are people that haven't been contacted that need to be contacted.
I'm sorry. I was making a terrible joke.
You're trying to get me in a lot of trouble today.
I'm sorry. Please ignore that. Keep going. Keep going.
So we shore up cases for prosecution. We assist the prosecutors in locating witnesses. Sometimes we protect witnesses. We do all kinds of stuff. We locate people that don't want to be found. We bring them to court when they don't want to come into court. I'm very unique in what I do. I do supervise the criminal unit, so all those investigators that are out there doing those things I just mentioned, I supervise them. But then I also supervise the real estate fraud unit. And in the real estate fraud unit, we look specifically at things that are associated with real estate and real property transactions within the county.
Wow, that sounds so all-encompassing. And is there a bleed over between the criminal unit and the real estate fraud unit?
Well, we're one team. All of our investigators are just one big team. So,
well, I meant like the crime itself. Could someone be guilty of both a criminal act? Well, I guess real estate fraud is criminal, but
right. It's a specific type of crimes that we look at. It's not a matter of whether it's criminal or whether it's not. It's just the kind of crimes that we look at. We look at securities violations. We look at things associated with real property. Usually the cases that we're involved in are going to be high-dollar cases.
Gotcha. So one thing we've talked about, and you'll have to define this again for me because I forgot, is sovereign activity.
Well, we have a movement afoot in the United States, which is called sovereign citizenry, actually. And these folks tend to think of themselves as constitutionalists, and they think that the laws don't really apply to them. And as such, they don't feel any need to abide by them.
Don't recognize the court system.
They don't recognize the court system, but what's unique about them is that they use the court system, and they'll use the court system against society, basically. So as an example, where we're seeing it right now in real estate is associated with people that are getting foreclosed upon. And although they've done everything these folks have to try to keep from being foreclosed upon, those kind of legal options are not working for them. So now they're taking other tactics, and they're falsifying documents, and they are forging liens and putting fake liens on properties in order to stall or stop the foreclosure process. And that's where we're seeing the sovereign activity happening right now in the county.
So forging liens, you know, we have a great process with escrow and title to get insurance mm-hmm. and make sure that doesn't happen. But if you're a good forger, I guess, you can forge a lien, you could fool the title company.
Well, one of the things that we're seeing a lot of are the UCC filings, which is the Uniform Commercial Code filings, which are basically liens, and folks are trying to go in and put these loans or these liens on property. And what that does is just tie up the process. It forces your title folks to have to see, is this an actual true lien, or is this just something that's been placed on the property that's not really valid, in which case it has to be kind of backed up and taken out of the system in order for the sales to go forward. Same thing with foreclosures. It has to be removed in order for it to go forward. So it really, the sovereign activity is very good at mucking up the system and slowing things down.
So I can see if you wanted to, let's say your house was under foreclosure and you wanted to delay the foreclosure, so you forge liens, so that delays the process. What would be the other example why you'd want to do that?
Well, a lot of times what's happening these days is they're also hijacking bankruptcies. So they're forging quitclaim deeds and giving a small portion of their property to other people, and that has the effect of stopping the foreclosures for a while as well until the banks catch on. It takes a while for the banks to catch on, but once the property is in bankruptcy, all bets are off for a little while, and you can't foreclose on the property.
Just so folks know, a quitclaim deed is when you, like you might do that for a spouse if you're, or a child, or, you know, and you want to like give them the property without formally selling them and without going through a process. You know, if it's someone you're connected with and you trust them and all is good, you might use a quitclaim deed. So they forge it, a portion of the property, and that again delays. But the end result is they're doing this to delaying foreclosure.
Correct.
There's no other reason you would...
No, there's no other reason for them to do it. That is what it's designed to do, is delay the foreclosure. And honestly, with a lot of these tactics that have been happening that we've been seeing over the last few years, people have been staying in their houses, you know, 5 to 7 years after they stopped making payments.
Yeah, there was a piece on 60 Minutes a long time ago about, and they had a great term for it, and it was when people were underwater, and these were generally wealthy people who are connected and got advice, and they had a great term for it. It made it sound so acceptable, instead of calling you a leech, you know, and screwing over the lender,
or a criminal.
A criminal. Yeah, thank you. And I'll think of it. It was just a great term. My guest is Jennifer Dalton, formerly known as Jennifer Glimp. She's a district attorney investigator. She's a supervising investigator in the criminal unit and the real estate fraud unit in the district attorney's office. So people staying there. I mean, so if you file a bankruptcy, now you can't forge a lien good enough so that you actually get paid off, like you're a lender.
You know, sometimes that kind of stuff happens, but mostly not. I mean, we can talk about specific cases if you'd like. One of the cases we worked this year that has been adjudicated, so I can actually talk about it, is the Nicholas Balcom case. And in the case of Nicholas Balcom, he indeed created a false deed to a property. He did it a couple of different ways and a couple of different times. The first way he did it, he tried to put his mother onto the property and say that his mother had deeded the property to him. And when that got rejected by the clerk recorder's office, he then went, located who the former owners or the current owners of the property were, pulled himself a copy of that recorded document, and then fixed it up, and showing that it transferred title from that former owner or the current owner to Nicholas. And he walked into the house, lived in the house for a while, changed everything over, put everything into his name, dealt with the police department on a couple of different occasions, showing him paperwork, but he had falsified that lien that was then placed on the property.
And he went down and recorded it.
Yes, and for all intents and purposes, that's transferring title.
And what aroused, I mean, so what aroused the investigation, the true owners?
Well, that was part of it. That came along a little later. It actually started out as just a basic squatter case where people in the community were contacting their local law enforcement agency and saying, you know, something funky is happening at this house. It's supposed to be vacant and people are trying to sell it, but now there's some people in there and there's some traffic, foot traffic back and forth. So that's how it kind of started, and the police department started coming out and kind of checking things out. But Mr. Balcom had been pretty smart in what he'd done, because once he got inside the house, he changed the locks so that he had the keys to it. He put the utilities in his name so that when law enforcement came, he could say, yes, look, I'm the owner of this property. And he did things that made it appear as if he was legitimately there.
What is that expression? Possession is...
9/10 of the law.
He took it to the max. He tried to make that work.
He certainly did. And even when confronted with it, he continued to push it forward. Mr. Balcom took us to trial. We actually went to trial. Typically, in cases like this, I like to think of the real estate fraud unit as a very professional unit. We do the best that we can to put together rock-solid cases from the very get-go, and I usually don't move forward with a case that I don't think that I can win completely. I just don't think it's ethical to do that, and when you're talking about tons and tons of money, you better be right, right? But with somebody like Mr. Balcom, when we're dealing with somebody like that and they understand that they've been caught and they know that they can't win a case like this, they usually will take a plea deal. And Mr. Balcom, we offered him numerous plea deals, and he just refused to take them. He sat in jail for a long time.
Can you tell us what you offered him?
Well, at one point, he had been in jail for over a year for this crime, and we offered credit for time served, saying, just, you know, admit your guilt, and then you're out. And he said no. So we took it to trial. And he ended up getting three years in state prison.
What do you think he was thinking?
He thought
he could win? Even if he could, I mean, what was he thinking? He basically said, just go away, like, you know, we're even.
Well, he had some other issues that were pending over his head from another state. So I think he really didn't have much to lose, and he thought he'd rather do his time here in Santa Barbara than go back to the other jurisdiction that was also looking for him.
Ah, so what happens in 3 years when he gets out?
He immediately transfers to that jurisdiction.
Oh, so he's going to be paying for this for a while.
Yeah. Well, he actually was coming from New York State, and in the state of New York, he had done the same things with different properties. That's how he learned to do it. He kind of perfected his craft.
Well, you got to give him credit for trying.
Got to, I suppose.
So what he gets out of it is he lived in this house for 7 years?
No. He only lived there for a few months. However, depending on, let's say the property owners lived out of state, which these property owners did. If you have a property owner that lives out of state and is just holding a house as an investment, Mr. Balcom could have squatted in that house for years, potentially, without being kicked out. So he gets a free house out of this for as long as he can keep this kind of scam going.
A facade.
Mm-hmm.
And where did the property owners live?
They lived out of state.
In this case?
In this case.
So he did try to pick the right property. It just didn't work out as long as he could.
He was very smart about it. He also had gone to various real estate agents and was looking to get a loan, basically, to purchase this property at the same time.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a text from somebody to tell me the term I was looking for. My guest is Jennifer Dalton, formerly known as Jennifer Glimp, district attorney. She's a supervising investigator for the district attorney's office in the criminal unit and real estate fraud unit, real property. And we're talking about people who trying to get away with stealing. And I was trying to remember a term where people who are underwater on the house, and I think you brought up the example about people who just stay in a house for 7 years. Maybe that's where I got the 7 years from. People who just don't leave.
Right.
And
there are people that intentionally defaulted on their homes.
And I got the term. And default is one of the two words. It's called strategic default.
There you go.
And doesn't that make it sound like, you know, like, yeah, I got this advice from my accountant. It's called strategic default. Mm-hmm. It sounds so accepting.
Well, you know, about probably 3 to 4 years ago, there was a group of people that decided to do exactly that in the Santa Barbara area. And for a while, it worked for them. But at this point, all of those people are being foreclosed on, and many of them are being evicted.
Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about strategic default in Santa Barbara, and maybe you can learn how to do it yourself to avoid prosecution. I guess that's what we're doing here. Is Nicholas Baucom, is he giving interviews? Could we get him on the line?
You just never do know with Mr. Baucom.
Can guys do that? Is that legal?
Well, he's in prison, so I doubt that he's going to be chatting with you anytime soon.
But I mean, guys make phone calls? Did they interview OJ when he was in... Maybe you can help me get some guests.
I can't pull any strings that way.
I can get some.
I'm telling you, you're trying to get me in trouble today.
All right. Well, let's see. Well, you can always change your name. Oh, you already did that. Jennifer Dalton's today's guest, Mark Snyman's Radio Real Estate. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with strategic default in Santa Barbara. We've got an embezzlement case, and who knows? We might even talk about the Boston Celtics.